Welcome to Flavors Under the Big Sky, celebrating the bounty of the region. I'm Stella Fong. In this show, we talk to San Diego area executive chef Bernard Guillas of the La Jolla Beach and Tennis Club exclusively. He was recently here for the 25th MSU Billings Wine and Food Festival, participating in the Monday night guest chef's dinner at the Northern Hotel. He was joined by Billings executive chefs Nick Steen of the Northern Hotel, Carl Kurokawa of Giuliano's, along with Kevin Davis of Steelhead Diner, Blue Acre, and Orfeo in Seattle. The next day, he taught a home cooking school entitled Spring Fling, Sharing the Love. The title of this course was apropos in so many ways. In the studio today, I have Bernard Guillas from La Jolla Beach and Tennis Club and Marine Room in the San Diego area. Thanks for joining me, Bernard.
Always my pleasure to be here in Billings.
And this is your fourth time back for the Wine and Food Festival?
Yes, and I have to tell you, my last time was 10 years ago, and I didn't know that 10 years can go that quickly. But it was so cool to be back. I love the city. I love the people. And, you know, MSU is very special, so I love it here.
I know it's fantastic to have you because this was the 25th celebration for the Wine and Food Festival.
It was a milestone, and I think that it was really cool that last night we had a guest chef dinner where, you know, we had a tasting menu, four courses, really fun, different chefs, chef from Seattle as well. So that was really awesome.
Right. And your dish, I'm just going to read it right now. It's the Main Diver Scallop Crudo. It had Asian pear, caviar pearls, mint crystals, opal basil flowers, smoked sea sorrel, and argan oil. Now that's only, I feel like, touching a little bit of it because I was actually at that dinner and I felt like there were a little bit more ingredients in that dish.
Yeah, the chefs in the kitchen say, are you going to add one more thing, really? And then I say, yeah, we're going to add a Thai ginger salt, which is really, really neat. And then added some fennel pollen crystals. And to the argan oil, I also add a little bit of hazelnut. So it makes it really, really fun. But I wanted to bring something from San Diego. It would be a nice signature, which is seagrass.
Ah.
And I brought the ocean to Billings, and you could taste that nice and slightly salty flavor of that seagrass or that seaweed. It was really, really cool. So the bottom line is I wanted to create a dish that would be a little bit different, represent a little bit San Diego, but at the same time, you know, push a little bit the envelope because, you know, crudos are a little bit different. And especially when you have a little bit of caviar, we call it fish eggs here because, you know, we go fishing. And I just went, you know, let's make it fun. And it was really, really fun. And the wine pairing was spot on.
I thought the wine pairing was also spot on.
Yeah.
It was a Sauvignon Blanc Semillon, and it had that minerality and just the right amount of citrus, and it was delicious. It really was. I'm going to order some of that. And your inspiration, aside from the sea, you actually brought some fresh ingredients that we don't get here in Montana right now because we're just emerging into spring.
Yeah, and, you know, for us, we got very blessed and very lucky this year. We were in a major drought in California. And within the first 4 months, we pretty much got, I would say, two-thirds of where we should be. So it's been a lot of rain, and it's been a lot of love, actually, for my farmers because my farmers really wanted to get that to be able to recoup their loss, I would say. So it's really nice that, you know, we're able to kind of gather all those ingredients and for me to be able to share with you guys.
Well,
that's awesome.
It was a piece of art. It was delicious as far as on our palate and visually beautiful for our eyes. I'm going to step back a little bit. You have been at the La Jolla Beach and Tennis Club for over 20 years now. How many years?
23 years.
23. And it's been fantastic?
I would call it an amazing journey because the restaurants have done very, very well. The hotel and the private club is doing fantastic. We're continuing to grow. I was told by a friend of ours, Pam Wishkamper, a long time ago, she was my PR, and she told me, Bernard, you need to be ready because you have a lot of young chefs coming in.
Yes.
And restaurants coming in. So, you know, you're going to have to share the pie, and you have to understand that you will not get as much press and as much recognition. And it's really interesting, because when you immerse yourself in your community, you support your community and you try to make a difference, you know, you get also that support for your business. And so it's very zen. It's good karma, and it's good to be able to make a difference. And at the same time, you continue to grow yourself and your business. So we are busier than ever. And that's what has been really fun for me. But besides that, I've been traveling a lot. I wrote a second book as well.
Well, let's start with your book, since you brought that up. You had, back in 2009, Flying Pans, Two Chefs, One World. It's a big world.
It is a big world.
Now you have a new book, and that's Flying Pans, Two Chefs, One Catch. Tell me about that.
Ladies, I'm the catch. Two Chefs, One Catch. Well, you know, Ron and I, my chef de cuisine, who's been working with me for now 19 years.
You've co-authored this book with Ron.
Yes.
Oliver.
Yeah. Yeah. In California is much longer than any marriage. So we're doing really good. What we wanted to do is to focus on something who is the most mismanaged part of our planet, which is our oceans. So we did a lot of studies. We did a lot of research. And the book is about culture, cuisine, travel, but also looking at and analyzing our beautiful sea creatures, and tell the world of what you can do to enjoy them, what you can do to save them, preserve them for future generations, and looking at the big picture. So it was really, really cool, because my first book was self-published. I didn't know, and Ron didn't know exactly what to do. We just wanted to write a book. That's it.
It was a beautiful book, and it was very well received.
Yeah, the IACP really gave us some great kudos about it as well, so that was really fun. And the second book was published by Lion Press.
Congratulations.
So thank you. And it was fun, and it was different, because first book took us about almost 4 years to write, to tell you the truth. And the second book, we did it in like 16 months, 18 months, something like this. But what I wanted to do is to make sure that all the recipe that we would have to that we would showcase, and it's about 22 species, would be very easy for everyone to do at home. So today,
good,
for example,
good.
At the luncheon, I did that scallop. AKA, it's a scallop crudo, but it's more like a tartar, but it's really, really light. And it just reflects where we were at that time. And that recipe is a recipe that I learned to do when I was in Australia. So they have gorgeous diver scallops over there, and it's really nice, it's fresh, it's fun. So that's what the book has been all about, just, you know, seafood. And the book actually won Best Cookbook at the San Diego Book Competition, so that was really nice as well.
Fantastic. And the premise of the book is, I'm believing, that you're showcasing seafood at its best.
Yeah.
That you're not fussing with it a whole lot, you're just letting it be.
You know, it reminds me when my chef, when I was a young boy, 15, told me, do not torture your ingredient, let them speak. And it means that just take that beautiful seafood was just being plucked from local waters, and just showcase it in a way that you're able to keep the complete integrity of the flavors and textures. And like this, you know, it makes it just simple. It makes it really delicious and to the point. So that's what the goal was, and the book is doing fantastic. I sold more of that book than the first one.
Wow.
And the first one, we sold 22,000 copies.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, so it's really good. It's fun.
And you've built a reputation. You've talked about at age 15. Tell me about your background. I really don't know where your passion for cooking came from.
I was born on a small island, the island of Jersey, between France and England. And my parents were running a big dairy farm over there. They were in charge of that, Jersey cows. And then I was pretty much sent to my grandmother at age 6 months. So grandma lived in Brittany. And it's very funny, because I stayed with her all the way to age 7. And when I came to this country, we start to talk about the new movement, farm to table. And I was like, oh boy, I'm ahead of the game on this one.
You
because
haven't.
With grandma, it was garden to table or nothing. So preserving the bounty was a big thing for my grandma. So it was like, it was natural to me. And then I had an uncle who was a baker. I had an uncle who was a butcher. Rest of the family was in the farming industry. So they had big farm, dairy farm. I mean, you just name it.
So you knew where food came from.
It was normal. But what really made it happen is this small anecdote. When I was about 14, what we do in France is we have French, this is career day every Saturday, and it's only for 1 hour. So the boys do what the boys do.
Then what do boys do?
Well, you know, mechanic and painting and, you know, all that crafty stuff. Then one day I look at my hand, we just work on a little Muppet engine, and I had grease all over my hand. I told my buddy, I say, hey, where are the girls? They're sewing, they're baking, they're cooking. I said, good enough for me. So the week after, I went there. Well, I have to tell you, if you want to be the king of the campus, you make sure that you go there. And I baked a chocolate cake.
Oh,
chocolate souffle, actually. My souffle went up and my confidence went up. Oh, boy.
And it hasn't changed since.
but it was really, really funny. It was like, I really love this stuff. And I was cooking with my family as well. So I did an apprenticeship for a two-star Michelin with Georges Pinault in Brittany. At the time, best 40 best restaurant in Europe. Wow. So I had a really great platform to really learn. I would drive to Rungis, Paris, which is 3 hours to drive and 3 hours to come back to the opening of the market. So you really, I was immersed into what would be great food and a way to really learn the best technique, mm-hmm. the best way to shop, what you're looking for when you look at an ingredients, between the smelling, the tasting, the touching, everything. And I did it for 2 years, and then I moved to French Guiana.
Oh.
Yes, Brazil. I was there for about a year and a half, and then came back to France. I was working very close to the base, Ariane Space Shuttle,
mm-hmm.
and came back, and I didn't want to stay in France anymore. It was like I was done. So I just went, I'm going to take a job. So I got a job at Petrus in Hong Kong, best restaurant. 4 days after I say yes to the gentleman, to the chef, I receive a call from Pierre Chambrin, who was the chef of Maison Blanche, who became the chef of the White House mm-hmm. under the Bush and Clinton administration. And he told me, he said, hey, you need to come to America. I'm like, chef, I am going to Hong Kong. He said, no, I talked to the chef in Hong Kong, you're coming to America. And I go, well, I guess I'm going to America.
So
I packed my bags, boom, came to the U.S.,
All right.
So I was with him in Washington, D.C. for about 4 years and then moved to San Diego.
You've been there ever since?
U.S. Grand Hotel for about 4 years and then 23 years at the Marine Room. So it's been a great journey because, you know, it's a journey of learning. It's a journey of passion. And it's a journey that has taken me around the world. And the world is beautiful.
And where have you traveled?
Well, about 3 weeks ago, I was in Cape Town, a very, very interesting city, beautiful city, very European on one side, and then you go to the township. My vision of a township was a little town, a township, and it's like 1.4 million people live in the township. It's at the poorest level that you can imagine. I went to Ezekiel School, which is a small little culinary school. They have 3 burners, a small oven, and that's the school. So I did a presentation for them and talked to them about my life. And then I told them that I will be their student that day. So they taught me how to cook South African cuisine.
What did you learn?
We did pops, which is a white corn meal, very, very tight. And then you form a ball when it's really hot. And you flat it in the side of your palm.
Mm-hmm.
So it become like a disc. And then inside, what you do is you put some vegetables. So we add zucchini and onions and that. And then you just close your hand and then seal it. Then you form a ball again, flour, egg, and roast it. So that was one thing. And the second thing I did was something very different. Goat tripe curry.
Oh.
delicious. It All was right. so good. It was awesome.
And the curry, is it more, what type of curry?
Green curry. Okay. It's a green curry, very, very interesting. Malay style. So there's a spice, but not over spicy.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of vegetables with it, cooked very, very slowly and very gently. And it was really delicious. And then what I did is I was doing a dinner at the President Hotel. And I asked if there would be one student who want to shadow me for that day. Of course, everybody would come in, except a young lady came in and say, I will be the one who want to be with you. So she spent from 11 a.m. to 11 p.m. She was in the kitchen.
How old was she?
She was 16 years old. And yes, at that time, she already had a 3 years old child.
What a great opportunity for her, though.
It was just amazing. I think that the most amazing thing is somebody, there was a writer who was there who wrote a story. And the name of the story gives me goosebumps right now, because when you experience and see what I've seen, the name of the piece was Freedom on a Platter. And I thought it was a really great way to say, to bring everyone together for one common thing that we all understand, which is food.
Right. It brings people of all cultures together.
Yes, it was really beautiful. Then visited some of the community gardens. I'm going back next year. Community gardens who are also in the township, who have created a lot of income, a lot of energy. So next year, I am not doing an ocean to table, a farm to table. I am doing a community garden to table.
Oh,
so I will be working.
Great idea.
Yeah, we will harvest everything in about 4 or 5 gardens, and then we'll do a luncheon. Then you cannot do it at nighttime. It's way too dangerous. You just cannot do it. During the day, it's not a problem.
I know, but it shows your talent, because many people like to follow recipes, but you have this innate ability to just bring food together.
I like to bring food together. I like to meet people. I like to bring people together. You know, we're here on this beautiful planet Earth for a very short time. So if you're able to give back, if you're able to make someone smile and have a good time, I think that you achieve something that was important.
And you certainly do that. Aside from Cape Town, give me a couple of other influential towns that you've been to that just will stay with you forever.
Hong Kong, Singapore, Thailand, Morocco, when I was a young boy with my family, going there and being and running in the souk, and the spices was just unbelievable. India, I went to India 3 times. India really changed my life. I mean, spiritually as well. It's very, very interesting. It's an amazing culture. So if you have a chance to travel to India, you have to travel to India. It's really, really very special. And you're all over Europe, of course. I mean, you go to Italy. I mean, I remember I was in Italy, and you know, they're selling porcini on the side of the road in the truck. So I say, you know, I want a kilo of this, you know, 2 pounds, and you go back to the house and you just roast them. It's just amazing. Spain, Australia. I did very interesting work in Australia. There was a fundraiser for the Children's Hospital in Melbourne for kids with leukemia, for the leukemia research. 10 years in a row, I did a dinner fundraiser at Euring Station in Yarra Valley. Mm-hmm. And it was, you know, another way to give back as well, but to learn and discover. So I discovered wallow seed, which is a spice from the bush, from the, you know, in Australia. And that particular spice is on my elk.
What characteristics does the spice have?
Hint of pepper, hazelnuts, and coffee.
What a combination.
Oh, it is so good. It really is good. It's good on savory, and it's good on sweet as well.
Welcome back. In this second segment, we will get to know Executive Chef Gius even better. I am going to ask you a few things, and I just want you to respond.
Mm-hmm.
So let's start. Culinary inspiration, culinary hero.
Well, Georges Pinault, of course, and Tatsuya in Australia, and all of the chefs that I met along my short life.
You've met many chefs.
Many chefs.
Many, many.
Many inspiration.
Favorite cookbook or cookbooks?
Escoffier. I was given a copy of Escoffier. A friend of mine came in and said, hey, my great-granduncle has a French cookbook. I want to give it to you. It is signed by Escoffier. Oh. His great-granduncle used to work at the Carlton in London as a young cook. And Escoffier was visiting and signed his copy. What I love about the book and all the cookbooks, that's what everybody should do, write footnotes on those books, because those books become journeys and you pass it on from generation to generation. That's what I call awesomeness.
Well, I would love to see that cookbook. I'm sure the pages are stained and things are ripped out and curls and all that.
Notes, footnotes everywhere.
Oh, wow. I'd love to see that.
Regular
one
recipe
day.
of Escoffier, and then something is scratched, you say, no, it's 2 tablespoons. It's like really?
Okay. Do you still refer back to it?
I like to read it. I don't really refer that much, but I like to read it because there is always some interesting things that were written at the time. And the other book that I have is The Philosophy of Taste from Brillat de Savarin, which is a blend of not only cooking, it is ingredients. It is ingredients as healing, as medicine, as well as wine and society. It's really awesome. And that one, I found it on the little island of Jersey, and it is an authentic, original, not signed, but original, pressed.
Oh my gosh.
Two tomes, so mm-hmm. two books. And that one, I always love to read it because it takes me back in time, almost in a time that maybe at one point I was there. I don't know.
Well, tastes were more basic and more, I would say, raw.
It was raw, but it was such a great understanding about what an ingredient can do, especially when it comes to medicine. And it's like, you know, you read the book was written 120 years ago, and now you look at it and say, oh yeah, we do this now. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you know, it's complete 360. It's like, wow, pretty cool.
Yeah, that is fantastic. Okay, a tool you cannot live without in the kitchen.
Microplane zester, Vitamix, and very sharp knives.
All right. Comfort food.
It depends where I am. It depends on my mood. But I like braised. I like steamed fish. I love seafood. So I eat a lot of seafood. And I have to tell you, I love vegetarian and vegan. I love it.
It's my favorite these days.
Spice. And you put the spice in it. Yeah. It's just like, it's so good.
Makes it robust and flavorful.
Indeed.
All right. Favorite food to cook?
That will have to be seafood, of course. But I mean, you know, it depends because, you know, sometimes if it's raining outside, I don't mind to get a nice organic chicken and root vegetables sticking in the oven. And, you know, you open the oven a couple of times and it becomes aromatherapy for the whole house. It's really awesome.
Secret junk food.
Well, I have a sweet tooth. So I would say Kit Kat.
Oh.
I know. That's bad, isn't it?
I would not have expected that answer.
What can I say?
Favorite meal of the day?
Lunch. I like my big salads. I work out in the morning, so it's more on the shakes. But if I travel and I am in Spain or in Argentina, it will be dinner and most likely at 10:30, 11 o'clock at night.
So it just depends on where you are and what
parrilla,
you're doing.
Parrilla, just on that grilled, beautiful beef that they have over there and that you have over here. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's pretty awesome.
All right. You have been cooking for a long time. What is your philosophy on cooking?
Well, a chef should be a good caretaker of Mother Earth, making sure that we keep everything in balance. If you want great food, it has to be in season, and it has to be seasoned properly and cooked properly. At the restaurant, a sleek white plate replaces a white canvas. Instead of paint, we have our fruit and vegetables colors and textures. So what we create is edible art, and what we create is hopefully memorable experiences and new traditions. So something that you look forward to experience now and again and again with friends and family.
And it holds in your memory, so you remember it all too.
Mm-hmm.
Finally, what is your advice for young chefs?
You know, I told a young chef, a young boy of 12 years old came to me with his parents. That was about 5 years ago. And he said, I want to be a chef. And I say, sounds good. I said, do you like your friends? You spend a lot of time with your friends? Yes. About your family with during the holidays? Yes. And I said, well, all those things, unfortunately, they will need to go. Because when you look at what we are doing, we work during the holidays. And we do this and we do this and we do that. So little boy say, I will be a chef. Well, I have news for you. He's at Perse in New York.
Oh, my gosh.
At Perse in New York now, he's age 18, 19. Yeah, he did his culinary school. And I saw his parents actually about a year ago who came in and said, you know, you change our boy's life. And he always talk about you because you told him the truth. So if you want to be a good chef and a great chef, your secret ingredients is in your body, and the name of it is your heart. If you have it in your heart and you're passionate, you will be very successful. The things that you need to do is to be curious. You always look for something different. To be very good student, you have to be really good in math because it's something that is very important when it comes to cooking. Even you can say, well, really, you do cook with numbers. I always say that numbers and math is exactly like spices. You need to have a very intimate relationship with them. If you know them well, you'll be successful. And you need to have that that urge also to travel, because the more you will travel as a young student or as a young person who wants to be a chef, you will be able to discover cultures and cuisine who are very, very diverse all throughout the world. I mean, you know, the world is a quilt of culture, cuisine, people. It's a non-ending, and that's what's really great about it. And we have to remember that as a chef, you have to be ready for the ever-changing expectation of your guest.
So you have to be moving with the times.
You have to be moving with the time and ahead at the time. So you go to my restaurant and you say, you know what, I am celiac. I cannot have any gluten. Your waiter should not tell you, let me ask the chef. Everybody should be educated and know those dishes perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, sometimes I look at the board, you know, at the pass when we have all our tickets, and I just go, is that marine room today or is that a hospital? Because allergy of pepper, allergy of this, allergy of that. There's so many allergies. But as chefs, we have to be able to accommodate and look past it and create an experience where your guests who are coming to the restaurant have the best time of their life. The hardest and most difficult allergies I had was black pepper. So what we have created in my kitchen is you have a set of cooking pans and utensils who are 100% sanitized.
Oh my gosh.
And if you have someone who is coming in who have very serious allergies, because allergies are very, very serious, you have someone in my kitchen who is going to be cooking only those meals, and that's it.
That is fantastic, because you're truly, truly with your heart feeding the stomachs and soul of your guests that are coming in.
Yep.
And that really does make a difference.
It is.
And I also think that it's passion and a lot of hard work.
Yes.
You work very, very hard.
Yes, I do.
So.
But you know, I love it. I love it. I was asking, hey, Bernard, so if you would not be a chef, what would you be? A chef. A chef is my life, and I love my life. I meet people like you, people all around the world who are so beautiful, so passionate, so human, so wonderful. And that's what fuels me. Just that very special experience. And that's why I'm here in Billings doing the wine and food. I love it. I love it.
Well, we thank you, and we thank you on how deliciously you fed the world. And I thank you for being with us today.
Thank you so much.
May you continue to share the love as Chef Bernard Gilius has done. Theme music for Flavors Under the Big Sky, celebrating the bounty of the region, has been provided by Parker Brown. For recipes from Chef Gilius' home cooking school and the menu from the guest chef's dinner, go to ypradio.org. I'm Stella Fong.